You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, happy Saturday. Welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week podcast. I'm host audio producer of the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, Steven Serta. The NFL offseason is officially upon us, and the NFL Combine is just around the corner. So, got plenty to get into and get caught up on after no Best of the Week last week. So, we'll start things off with beach season, just breaking down the Chiefs cap space with Rocky Magana, Kramer Sansone, and Jared Sapp. After that, it's Chiefs Coast to Coast, just kind of diving into the off-season preview. After that, it's the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. This week, it was just me and Pete discussing our marinated takeaways from another Super Bowl season for the Kansas City Chiefs. After that, we'll take a quick timeout, then we'll catch up with the Great British Chiefs Show. This week, it was Brad joined by Rocky Magana, just discussing the Chiefs off-season and some decisions that they have to make. After that, we'll wrap things up with the Arrowhead Pride Draft Room, Ron Kopp, Caleb James, discussing their positions of need. That's all coming up on today's Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week.
Jared, can the Chiefs three-peat? What's your take on that?
It's never been done, even with some very good teams that went back-to-back. I mean, I think we have to start by admitting that they can. I think the first thing that's really playing up to their favor is I think the Chiefs will again be in a very winnable division next year, to where it's, barring injury, it's hard to see them not as a playoff team. I think the Chargers are probably going to take a mulligan year with their cap situation, probably get some money off the books. And I think it's probably going to be a little bit of a process to get the crew Jim Harbaugh wants in there. Who's going to be the quarterback for the Broncos next year? If the Raiders can solve their quarterback situation, I think Kramer's Raiders can make a playoff run, but I don't think that there's a lot they can do to where they should be on the Chiefs level next year. I mean, the Chiefs have a very winnable division. So when you have that, it's like you're starting a 5K, like 1K into it. Like, they have a head start on what they need to do.
So Kramer, why will the Raiders crap the bed and why will the Chiefs three-peat?
I don't think they're going to crap the bed per se, but the Chiefs could, I think the Chiefs could easily three-peat. And like what Jared said, this is an actual, this, once they get the quarterback situation figured out, this is a playoff contending team. You saw the defense play last year, actually outplayed the offense for once. I haven't seen that in my entire time watching Raiders football, but that's, the Chiefs are so far ahead on the Broncos, on the Chargers. It's funny. I love people are saying Chargers are, oh yeah, it's, oh, Jim Harbaugh. Yeah. I mean, I'm a Michigan guy, so I enjoy watching Jim Harbaugh there. But with Jim Harbaugh there in Los Angeles, so many holes, so many holes he needs to fill. They're not even, please, if I see another, oh, it's the Chargers year, stop. You're kidding yourself. This is the Chiefs division still, no matter what. So they have a leg up.
Go ahead, Jay.
Wait till they see what the Chargers do to get out of cap hell before they say it's the Chargers year.
Well, and the Chargers will always be the stepchildren to the Rams in L.A., and let's be honest with Jim Harbaugh. If we've learned one thing about Jim Harbaugh, he's a very good coach. He's a very successful coach. He also is a coach with an expiration date at every single place that he goes to. He's not a guy who's going to coach somewhere for 20 years. He's going to rub people the wrong way. Yep, 3 years, something like that. He's going to win some games, but then he's going to be out. So if you think that Jim Harbaugh is going to be building a dynasty, think again. So before we move on, so let's see here. I think the Chiefs are going to three-peat. I'm putting my flag in the ground. I'm saying, yes, they're going to three-peat. Jared, do you think they're going to three-peat, yes or no?
You know what? I'm going to ride high on fandom. I'm going to say yes.
All right, Kramer. Are they going to three-peat, yes or no?
Yes. I feel actually confident that they can actually three-peat.
All right. We have three yeses, and for the fourth to make it to make it a certain, we're going to go to the most knowledgeable source and most infallible source of knowledge in the world, aside from ChatGPT, the Magic 8-Ball. So we're going to ask the Magic 8-Ball, will the Chiefs three-peat? Outlook is good. There you go, everybody. The Magic 8-Ball has said it. Yeah, the Chiefs are going to three-peat as Super Bowl champions. Carve it in stone. Start hanging the next banner already. It's a beautiful day to be a Chiefs fan, riding high on our third Super Bowl victory. We're going for a fourth, our third in 5 years. Sorry, our fourth total Super Bowl victory, going for a fifth total Super Bowl victory. Let's talk about Chiefs cap situation a little bit here. Our Tom Brady of cap situations on Arrowhead Pride, John Dixon, currently has the Chiefs at around $15.5 million in cap space. Jared, is that still currently accurate?
That's going to be about as accurate of a number as we can get. I know if you go on to SpotRack today, I think they have it at about $24 million, but they have not put in the numbers for the Chiefs free agents, futures reserve free agent signings, to where they don't actually have a 51-man roster that they're counting it on. The thing about cap, and because the Chiefs kind of had their struggles earlier in the season, I feel like maybe some Chiefs fans were on to offseason and the cap earlier, and we were looking at like, wow, the Chiefs have a $40 million cap according to a certain website. Well, that certain website was operating with a $260 million cap that was never going to happen. And at the time, the Chiefs only had like 33 players signed for 2024. So that number never meant anything. But John Dixon's number is good. We've gone through and we've looked at the service time of all the reserve free agents to kind of estimate, because they're going to make the minimum salary. So we've put in what their minimum salary will be for each one of them. And we feel pretty confident that that's as reasonable of a guess as you're going to get for what the Chiefs cap currently is.
Awesome. So we're going to have $15.5 million. Obviously that's not going to get you Chris Jones and LeJarius Sneed for $15.5 million. Kramer, what you got, man?
So like, they're going to restructure contracts clearly here at some point. So we know something's going to open up, because we know Brett Veach likes to dabble into his money tree, likes to shake it every once in a while, and it just falls with this unlimited amount of money. Like, how soon does that need to happen?
The biggest misconception of internet GMs is that the salary cap is the budget. I can do all kinds of work, and I've done all kinds of work that I'm hopefully about to share with y'all that I'm going to be writing about this week about what the Chiefs can do to open more cap. What I can't do, I can't sit here and tell you this is the amount of money Brett Veach has from Clark Hunt to spend on free agents. We don't know that. Just because they can open cap room, there's no reason to open the cap room that you know you can't write a check to fill, is the thing. So that's, now I anticipate you got a three-peat on the line. I anticipate if there's an off season where the Hunt family is going to be like, we can do this, I would hope it's going to be this off season. But again, just because they can create cap doesn't always mean they're going to if they know they're not actually going to spend the money.
Well, let's dive into that just a little bit here and talk kind of about what are some things that for Chiefs fans out there who are thinking that, okay, you know, Clark and the Hunt family are saying we're going for the three-peat, we're going to open the checkbook this offseason. What are some things that the Chiefs can do to currently create more cap space on paper if they were willing to open the checkbook and spend it?
So there's three players who have a sizable, just, I cut this guy, I open up a lot of cap. I only really think that's going to happen with one of them. The three players who they could cut to open up a lot of cap would be wide receiver Marquez Valdes-Scantling. They can cut him and create $12 million of cap like today. I think they're probably going to cut him. We've also kind of cut Sammy Watkins and Frank Clark before their time earlier. If something happened and they said, I mean, Marquez had the worst year of his career. If there's ever a year where you could build a crazy contract with not likely to be earned incentives, like you could cut his salary by $8 million and say you get $5 million of it back when you get 35 catches. Like, it's would not be that hard to create a restructure. I still kind of think they're going to cut him, though, because they Justin Watson is still under contract. And I think that's just kind of a shortcoming of the Chiefs wide receiver room this year, was to have a third of your room being Valdes-Scantling and Justin Watson when they pretty much do the exact same things. But you can clear $12 million by cutting Marquez Valdes-Scantling. If they were to restructure him, I think it would still probably clear $9, $10 million. He's not going to play in Kansas City on his salary. The other two cut candidates, Justin Reed, you could clear over $10 million by cutting him. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think they signed Steve Spagnuolo to extension with and said, hey, by the way, the person who helps your communication, who helps your secondary run so well that so much of your defense runs through, we're going to cut him. I don't think that's going to happen. And if you think back a couple of years ago, they let Tyrann Mathieu finish his contract. He had like a contract number twice as big. But if it were to happen, you could clear about $10 million cutting Justin Reed. The other one, you could clear a little over $6 million by cutting Charles Omenihu. I think that would be a very jerk move. I think that probably is not going to be – I think the payoff, it's not as much money. It's a little less than $7 million. I think that would do a lot of damage to you, like for your reputation. And I also think, if anything, they'll probably maybe try to extend it for a year to maybe push a little of that down the road when hopefully he'd be able to play a whole season. But those are the cut possibilities. I'm going to guess that they create about $12 million cutting Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Given those options, I would probably say that's the one that sounds the most likely. Like, you're right. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is not going to play in Kansas City under his current contract next year. No. Whether they cut him and then maybe they bring him back for a few million dollars if there's not a lot of, you know, takers in the free agent market, and whether or not they should do that is a conversation that we can have at a later date. But he's definitely not going to play on that big of a contract next year. And the Justin Reed one, Spags likes having a veteran on the back end. He like, that's why he signed Tyrann Mathieu as soon as he got here. And then almost immediately following that, as soon as Tyrann Mathieu leaves, they bring in Justin Reed. So I don't see that happening either. The Charles Omenihu one, which you got to think about with something like that, is Charles Omenihu has inside outside ability. If we end up losing Chris Jones, then we need that interior pass rush there. And then also, okay, you're going to say six
and line trade acquisition next year. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play the whole year, but if you get him week eight, that's like trading for a pass rusher, which we beg the Chiefs to do every year.
Well, yeah, and if you – go ahead, Kramer.
And, like, I mean, honestly, if it's me, I'm cutting Charles Omenihu. It sucks that he ended up tearing his ACL, but he still won a Super Bowl. He can at least hang that on his hat and mana for that. But here's also – they can easily cut him and re-sign him. I mean, there's nothing that has stopped the Chiefs ever doing so, signing a guy late mid-season, even if he is healthy or not at the beginning of the season. I think it makes more sense cutting him and, I mean, clearly MVS as well.
But here's the deal. If you're going to cut somebody like Omenihu, yeah, you save $6.5 million, but you got to get an interior or slash edge pass rusher that can have the same amount of production and the same amount of juice for $6 million at that point.
But did we think he would have his production?
I mean, late in the season, I thought he had pretty good production.
I was actually shocked.
What do you think, Jared?
I mean, you'd also still have a pretty big dead money hit if you cut him. I don't think they're going to cut him as much as try to maybe see if they can tack a one-year extension on that, maybe move some of his 2024 money a year down the road and maybe gives him a chance to earn some money back with incentives when he's healthy. This would be my guess. I don't think they're going to cut him.
All right. Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal that he had a suspension to start the season and then ended up getting injured and he's going to miss half of the next season. I mean, it's definitely not an ideal situation. I don't think they move on from him, but like I said, we could be wrong.
Let's go to our Chiefs preview.
Stop it. Stop it. You can't do this. You can't escape. You can't make these plays. You can't make these throws.
Come on, give us a sneak preview.
Chiefs preview.
All right. Serta has been all over this, so I'm literally just going to pull up the text and read what pertains to the Chiefs as far as free agency is coming up. So the franchise tag window starts today. It ends March 5th. Free agency period is March 11th through the 13th. Legal tampering period and all that bull. Y'all know how that goes. And then the official league year starting 2024 league year starts on March 13th at 3 p.m. Central. The Chiefs have a list of impending free agents. This is also Steven Serta. Going to give that boy some love. Y'all know the obvious ones. Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed. Brett Veach has already gone on record about saying how they're a priority coming into this year. Ironically, you know, I live by the QT here in Westport. I saw L'Jarius Sneed today. So he's he's in KC. Yes, indeed.
Wow.
I saw L'Jarius Sneed today. I don't know if that's, I mean, you can aggregate me from there. Yes, L'Jarius Sneed is in Kansas City. The other guys, Donovan Smith, Willie Gay, Derek Nnadi, Jerick McKinnon, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mike Edwards, Mecole Hardman, Mr. Walkoff, Tommy Townsend, Mike Dana, Nick Allegretti, Andrew Tranquil. We don't have to go each one by the numbers, but give me one of those guys that maybe interests you as somebody who you want to keep here in the kingdom, Mark, and then maybe a guy you want to keep but you think might be too difficult to keep.
Yeah, so, I mean, looking at that list, I mean, obviously, we don't have to mention Chris Jones and Sneed. Obviously, you want to keep them, but
yeah,
can you keep them both? I don't know. I think you can keep one for sure. Keeping both may be a little tricky.
Who's the one for sure?
Yeah. Oh, if I had to pick?
Yes, who's the one for – you said you can keep one for sure. Who's the one that you for sure can keep?
Man, I'm going to have to say L'Jarius Sneed. Just because of the age, he's 3 years younger. I like the idea of having the best cornerback tandem in the league with him and McDuffie. And with Chris Jones, as great as he is, he's 30 years old. How many more dominant years does he have left? I think one for sure, maybe two, maybe. But I think you can lean maybe on your edge guys being more of your dominant part of your line instead of up the middle, like George Karloftis. We know you're hoping on FAU in year two to be a factor when Charles Amenihu comes back next year. I think you could still have a formidable defensive line. Obviously, it won't be as good without Chris Jones, but I still like the idea of having the best secondary because it can still help the D-line. It goes hand in hand. People always want to mention how the D-line can help the secondary. Well, it can go the other way as well, too, with sticky coverage. So I have to say Sneed by it's close, though. It's super, super close. But as far as our list, as far as other guys, like your underrated guys, I guess if you could say that I want to keep, it has to be Drew Tranquil. It has to be Drew. I mean, we talked about him this year a lot.
He added
a different dimension to the team, especially like when Willie Gay went out, he was able to be that guy. Nick Bolton missed time as well. And he had to play the green dot. He played multiple positions on the linebacker spot. And I think he's a guy that really loves being here. I mean, I'm sure you saw his sound bites at the parade. I mean, he said,
"Oh yes."
He took a shot at me. He said, "This is way better than L.A."
That was a Mark Gunnell stray.
That was towards me. He's like, "What you doing out there, man? It's way better in Kansas City." So I think he's a guy that would stay here, like on a kind of a hometown discount. Not to say he's going to break the bank anyway, but I think he just truly loves being in this winning environment, especially coming from the Chargers where they always came up short. You could tell he really embraced the culture here. He always raved about how everybody's so prepared and the expectations are just so high. So I think he definitely wants to settle in Kansas City. So he's a guy for sure I want to keep.
Looking at this list, I'm going to say a couple of things. Well, the first of them might be controversial, Mark. Out of Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed, the possibilities that you mentioned, one or both, I think it's most likely that it's neither. Hey, have you not considered that possibility? That with Jones's tag number being in the 30s and realistically somebody's going to shoot him a high ball offer and Sneed being a cornerback where they don't even really sign guys to second contract at that position. They haven't done it since when, 2017 or something like that. Like there is a world in which they say, hey, we're going to live in this middle ground defensively. We're going to make a lot of the Drew Tranquil signings. I agree. He's a guy that comes back for the cheap. Nick Allegretti, I think, is a guy that comes back for the cheap. Mike Dana, maybe comes back for the cheap if you're out of the Chris Jones market.
So if that's the case, then you think Willie Gay's coming back then?
I don't know if Willie Gay's coming back. And I also think as far as the running back room is concerned, Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Jerick McKinnon are elsewhere as well. I could see them going draft shopping in the running back room. I could see them going free agent shopping potentially in the running back room. I don't know if that's the most – I don't know if a lot of people are thinking that, but as far as how KC likes to do business, Mark, how they've done these deals, hell, the deal that they got Chris Jones back on this year was cheaper than the tag. He would have made more money on the tag, and it would have been guaranteed. He wouldn't have had to get all these incentive-laden stuff. Like, I do think there's a world where Brett Veach says, this is my number, I'm staying here, and if you want to compete for titles and you want to go three-peat, come here at this number. And I can see him saying that to both guys respectfully.
See, I think he bends on one of them. I just don't see a world where you can lose your two best defenders and then sell Mahomes and Kelce that, hey, we're going for a three-peat. I do think this is a rare situation to where you do have to entertain giving a cornerback a second contract, because before the year, I was exactly there on, you don't pay a cornerback. Brett Veach doesn't do that. But Snead play at such an elite level to where he makes you have to reconsider that way of thinking. And he's still going to be cheaper than Chris Jones because cornerback market is not nearly as high.
It's like 16. It's like exactly half, right? Like if Chris Jones wants 32, LeJarius Snead is around in the 16. But exactly. It's like when your parents said, we got McDonald's at home. You know, we can't get McDonald's and eat half food at home. Like they can't do both, Mark. This is – go ahead.
So if just let's live in your world for a second. If they lose both, are you saying that they make a big splash at receiver? Because something has to make up for losing your best two defenders.
No. I honestly, this is our first dabble into the offseason talk. This is our first taste of these storylines. I think Snead and Jones is going to be the big one. It depends. It depends on what deal you can get. I think maybe if Snead signs a team friendly deal, then you can load up and get Jones. Jones has already also back to parade day publicly said, I ain't going anywhere. So that helps your leverage a lot if you're the team. I think I saw
much,
even the
how eight. How much stock do we put into that, though? Because he was clearly drunk. Do we put any stock into that?
I think if you're Chris Jones, you go into the day saying, there's one thing I can't say on stage. And then you say the thing though
that you say on stage.
And you cost yourself like $5 million. That's a strong drink. Saying I want to go for the three-peat is one thing. And even LeJarius Snead on Kay Adams had a little bit more interesting. Like, I caught him on the parade route. He said, I'd love to be here, yada, yada. But on Kay Adams, he's like, pay me. Like, we're early in this thing, man. Like, I think it's likely that Snead is tagged.
I could see that. I'm not mad at that.
But the Chiefs don't like using the tag, though.
Got to use it on somebody, though, right? This year?
We'll see. We got time. This is a little rumor. Before we get to Vegas, one little quick rumor, and I know you like rumors. We're running long here on Chiefs Coast to Coast, episode 77. You love rumors. And this rumor about Jason Kelce partying with the Chiefs in Vegas, and he hasn't officially retired yet, and what if he wants to play with his brother? We're going to our rumor expert. Have you heard anything on the New Heights relocating to Kansas City and possibly the brothers playing together one year in the kingdom?
There's zero chance this happens.
Zero chance.
I mean, is he going to change positions? You already have an all-pro caliber center in Creed Humphrey. Like, so what are you going to do?
What I heard, and please don't report this.
Boy, he's going to play left guard.
It's a conversation in between. They're basically, because Creed was having some struggles, especially Super Bowl. I think the whole thing that pissed Rashee Rice off in the Super Bowl, that he missed that, and Mahomes goes to him on the sideline, and I thought the lip readers basically caught him saying, hey, motherfucker, he rolled it to me. I had to do what I could do. And there was a couple where Creed, you know, that aspect hasn't been the same. I'm not the best O-line breakdown, and I don't think Mark is either. We can tell when the snap is on the ground, you got to catch it at your shoelaces versus your kneecaps. And it messed up a couple plays. So yeah. The rumor is you would learn from one of the GOATs, play alongside him wherever that fits you. And, you know, this is a guy that Andy Reid, you know, has a connection to. It's not part of every rumor is a little bit of you can't say 0%.
See, it's funny now. You're doing what you accused me of doing. You're being the TMZ rumor guy. I see a tweet from our post from a guy that has 1,000 followers, but it got some traction though. Reddit, you was on a Reddit thread. This is one of those topics, man. I'm not entertaining this nonsense.
Well, I'm gonna let this marinate.
You know, let that one marinate, and then we can circle back.
Adapt, react, readapt.
It takes time. It takes years.
That's the takeaway.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, it's time to get into our world-famous marinated takeaways on the Super Bowl, the season, the back-to-back championships, the four Super Bowls that the Chiefs have. And Steve, usually I will let John go first. And so I'm always batting second. I was thinking about going first, and I'm just so used to being in that Derek Jeter two hole. So I'm going to let you go first and let me know what you thought about the Super Bowl and really the 2023 season as a whole.
You know, so I think my biggest takeaway coming out of the Super Bowl really has to do with next season and the future and all the decisions that the Chiefs have to make this offseason. And some of this from our contributor, Nate Christensen, who just posted an article this morning on arrowheadpride.com, 3 reasons why 2024 should be the Chiefs' most aggressive offseason. And I know it's something that he's talked about, and it's something that I totally agree with, but coming out of back-to-back Super Bowls, I am all in on a three-peat now. Like, I am all in on Patrick Mahomes and this Kansas City Chiefs team continuing to shape NFL history. And I think that the last couple of years where, you know, the Chiefs trade away Tyreek Hill and they make this franchise-changing decision, and Tyreek Hill is a Hall of Fame player. Like, he is the one of the best wide receivers in the NFL, one of the best wide receivers in NFL history. And he has done nothing but prove that during his time in Miami. But the Chiefs moving on from him and then just nailing draft class after draft class and having all of these young players and these guys, these depth pieces that they've also been able to afford, like slow developing some of these players to make sure that they're ready to step into significant roles when they need them to. Like, that's an advantage that most NFL teams can't afford. And the Chiefs have managed to do that in back-to-back seasons where they won Super Bowls. And so I think that going all in on a three-peat is like, it's like, if you're not going to do it for this, then what are you going to do it for? Like what are you, what's it going to take for you to commit the money and the resources? And I'm not saying put yourselves in a bad cap situation, but I think we would agree that the best version the Chiefs could field next season involves Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed being on this team and other offseason additions or whatever. But let's do it. Let's go all in on this thing. Let's try to change NFL history. Let's be the first franchise in NFL history to go for 3 straight Super Bowls. And I think I totally agree with Nate in saying that this should be a hyper-aggressive offseason for the Chiefs, where it's not just let's play for the future. Let's play for the future. No, let's play for right now. Let's go do this thing and let's change NFL history and try to win 3 straight Super Bowls.
Yeah. I don't think it's a necessarily me disagreeing here, but I think it is a me just kind of explaining to you how I feel based upon conversations I've had with people in the building, you know, dating to years ago when they first got Patrick Mahomes. I think there is a valid point to be like, well, look, this is a rare opportunity. I mean, some franchises will never get the opportunity to go on a three-peat. This has been a case where 8 teams have went back-to-back and 8 teams have failed of winning 3 Super Bowls in a row. And I think there is a attractive part about especially now, because I think you've seen from like a fan standpoint, comments on Twitter, comments on RSB Nation site, Arrowhead Pride and Pat's Pulpit, Patriots fans are getting involved, because now I think they're starting to feel threatened to bet that they're untouchable run as far as the greatest dynasty in NFL history, starting to feel a little touchable with the Kansas City Chiefs and what they're doing. And I think that's fun. I think that's exciting. I think that's good for the game. I think it's good for the history of the game. And I think it is telling as to like the territory the Chiefs are on. You know, Steve, I know that you are a guy that likes to listen to a lot of sports radio, sports talk, things like that. Bill Simmons, Mr. New England, has finally acknowledged that Mahomes is on the Brady corner. Like, for someone who's as pompous as Bill Simmons and nose up and, you know, Brady, everything, all this, all that, to say that, I think is really telling as to where the Chiefs are. And so I understand what everyone is saying, like, go all in for this now. I think that would be cool. I think the Chiefs are going to try their best to do both, where they're being somewhat aggressive this offseason, trying to get back to the Super Bowl. But also, you only have Patrick Mahomes for so long, you know, and I know that, he's only in his 20s. It seems like it's going to be forever. He's 28 now. In 2 years, he'll be 30. Suddenly, you know, as it goes, it feels like time is going to be so long. It happens quickly. You know, I never would think that the Chiefs are going to want to put themselves in some kind of like Los Angeles Rams hole. And for what it's worth, the Rams kind of fell off the cliff, and they were back to an extent this year. But I think the Chiefs want to be above average every season. Some years they're going to be teetering along elite. Other years, I think, are going to be like this past year, where they were an above average team. The defense was elite. The offense kind of ebbs and flows, but they finally found a way to do enough at the end. And I think what you learned this past season is you don't necessarily have to be the greatest team all time to get it done in the Super Bowl when you have Patrick Mahomes. And that is what has stood out to me. I think the Chiefs will potentially be a little bit more aggressive than previous off seasons. I think you have to be on the offensive side of the ball, especially in the wide receiver room. But I never think it's going to be, well, we're going for it this year, and you're like forfeiting potential flexibility for future years. So I buy into both to an extent, but I know how Kansas City's operating, and they understand that the amount of time you have Patrick Mahomes as a starter, although he is still young, it's finite. It's not this infinite clock. And so I think they'll be smart about that. All right. My first marinated takeaway has to do with the defensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. What a performance by Steve Spagnuolo. Listen to this line, Serta. You listening? 8 catches for 86 yards. Pretty good. That's a pretty good line. You know what that was? Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, and Deebo Samuel combined in the Super Bowl. The 49ers, the All-Star team, the Monstars. That was their line combined. Christian McCaffrey got his a little bit, which I think we all expected. And I knew that to an extent you would have to win despite CMC. He's that damn good. But these other receivers are pretty good themselves. Pass catchers, Ayuk, Kittle, Samuel. 8 catches, 86 yards combined. This came from John Ledyard, who was our newsletter film expert in AP Premier. This was his film review from the Super Bowl. At some point, we need to have real discourse about how many defensive play callers have ever been better than Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, how absurd is the resume? He's shut down so many of the best offenses the league has ever seen, and he's done it on the biggest stages. The Chiefs have some awesome football players, and then he names, Ledger names, Jones, Snead, McDuffie, but far from this star-studded group. The blitz schemes are diabolical. He can play any coverage and constantly alters his shells to confuse opposing offenses. His game planning is tremendous from opponent to opponent. Spags' player development is probably the aspect of his profile that gets overlooked the most. And then he says this, and this was a key part to me. How crazy is it that he had Shamari Connor ready to play like this as a rookie, covering George Kittle with the game on the line? That has turned everyone the Chiefs give him into solid situational pass rushers. They've developed KC into a 4-deep group at linebacker in an age where teams are scrambling for one competent second-level defender. Top to bottom, Hall of Fame-level job by Spags again. I think Kay Adams mentioned on Up in Adams, what is that, FanDuel? She has said and made the point, I don't think coordinators ever made it to the Hall of Fame. Steve's going to be the first. You know, and obviously he had that small stretch as a head coach. People say, well, maybe Spagnuolo is the guy to replace Reed when he's done. I mean, they're the same age, so that doesn't make a ton of sense. I think he's just going to be this forever coordinator. To your point, Steve, and going back to the last one, if they are able to pull off the three-peat, Spagnuolo is going to be a big part of it. He was the one who came in for Bob Sutton, has been a part of every championship. And I think he's putting together what will be a Pro Football Hall of Fame career as a coordinator. And I think, you know, that's paving the way in a sense for, especially with the way the NFL is designed now. I think you're seeing like the way that the Chiefs do it much more than maybe you see Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick wants his hands in every little thing. Andy's the head coach here, but he kind of lets Spagnuolo be the defensive head coach. And I think you see the impact of that. And before I throw it to you for comments on that point, Steve, I do want to bump a reminder of AP Premier. We'll be rolling through the offseason with 1 to 2 newsletters a week as we get ready for free agency in the NFL draft. John Ledyard was involved all year, did an excellent job giving us a bonus film review, and it's still available to you. If you want to subscribe to our AP Premier newsletter, you can do so arrowheadpride.com/subscribe. Anyway, Steve, just a tremendous job by Steve Spagnuolo.
Yeah, I don't think we can overstate his importance to this run that the Chiefs are on. And yes, last season was the best version of that, where their personnel just hit everywhere across the board on the defensive side of the ball, which is why we saw the Chiefs defense like put together an all-time caliber season that is somehow still like going to wind up getting lost in the shuffle of all of this stuff. Like I feel like that defense is going to be remembered forever here in Kansas City, but like national wise, NFL landscape wise, like I feel like it's still going to wind up being lost in the shuffle, even though they were so special last season. But that's something that you can point to over the last few years, and the way that the defense has gotten better, and the way that they've developed some of these guys, and the way that they've gotten all of these guys to, like, Steve Spagnuolo has been incredible at putting guys in specific roles and saying, this is what we need from you. This is what we need from you in your small area of the field, because every other guy is doing this. And this is how all the gears wind up fitting together, and everything turns on the defensive side of the ball. He's tremendous. And it really brings me to my next marinated takeaway, which is the Chiefs retaining their coaching staff year after year, the way that they have, is the biggest non-Mahomes advantage that they have over any other team in the NFL. And Pete, like, I haven't really talked to you about this, but I've been talking about it a lot on Arrowhead Pride. Like, I don't really understand it. I guess it's because they're an older staff and everybody wants, you know, the next, you know, Sean McVay disciple or Kyle Shanahan disciple, because we've seen other teams have success with those guys more so than, you know, the Bill Belichick disciples, which have been a disaster for the most part. Like, the Chiefs being able to just run this back with the coaching staff, where we see so much upheaval on NFL coaching staffs across the league. Like, we saw what happened with the Eagles last year. Like, none of us knew that Shane Steichen really was that important to the way that they function. And it totally fell apart for Philadelphia, despite the fact that they still had Super Bowl caliber talent on that roster. They just totally fell apart because the coaching staff just wasn't up to par with the standard that they had set the previous season. And the Chiefs just run this back every single year for whatever reason, because teams aren't willing to give the guys on their staff head coaching opportunities anymore. And it doesn't seem like that's going to change. And then we even see position coaches like Dave Merritt and Joe Cullen just say, yeah, I'm fine in Kansas City. I'll just stick here, stay on Spag's staff. I know we got players. I know we're competing for championships, and we're fine staying here. Like, it's a tremendous advantage that the Chiefs have over the rest of the NFL right now, and I don't really see it changing anytime soon.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I just wanted to talk about where do the Chiefs go from this now? Because obviously there is this talk about this three-peat, and Mahomes has been very vocal about it, even on the stand accepting his third Super Bowl, and he was talking about having a three-peat. That's because nobody else has ever done it before. How does Veach keep this team together right now? Because everybody's on a high. We all heard Chris Jones saying at the Super Bowl parade that he ain't going anywhere for the next 3 years, possibly, which I don't think that went down pretty well with the Katz brothers. But, I'm sure he'll have those conversations with those guys. I think you should just sack them and just sign the contract. Just sign it, Chris. Just do what everybody wants you to do, what you've promised everybody to do at the Super Bowl parade. Sign that contract for a team-friendly deal and go and get a three-peat. And create your legacy. How does Veach do this now? Does he sign Chris Jones? Does he sign L'Jarius Sneed? What does he do? How does he keep the band together?
There's a lot of balls in the air on this, right? And there's a couple schools of thought to it, right? The first is, this is a historic opportunity. No team has ever three-peated in history. Mm-hmm. Do you push all your chips in this offseason and go for it? Most teams sell the house to try to get one Super Bowl. The Chiefs haven't done that. The Chiefs have planned for the future. They've been very fiscally smart with their roster and their contracts that they've handed out, mm-hmm. and they've gotten themselves this far. But now you're at a tipping point of, is it worth pushing it all in for one season to do something that nobody has ever done before, right? Or do you hold the line and say, what we've done has gotten us this far, right? So the question there is, if you say what we've done has gotten us this far, then maybe you tag Sneed, and then you try to get Chris Jones to a team-friendly deal, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. You let some guys walk, you know, some things happen. If you're saying I'm pushing it all in, though, you convert Mahomes' contract, you kick the money down the road. Yeah, you try to free up as much liquid cash as you can. You give Chris Jones as big as a signing bonus as you can to lower the cap hit this year, you know, and then push money into future years that may end up being bad contract years that you have to pay out. But you're saying, I'm doing it because we have a chance of doing something historic here, right? And so with that, though, there's also another side to this with Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed. Like, L'Jarius, I don't think L'Jarius Sneed is going to give us any kind of a team discount, because this is his first chance to cash in being a mid-round pick, right? Like, this guy didn't have a huge rookie contract. This guy has earned his chance to go out and get it back. And he knows that with his past knee injuries, there's no guarantee of a third contract in the NFL, especially if you're at a position that requires so much speed and agility like cornerback does, right? Like, especially when you're known as like a press outside man, you know, corner, especially, right? Like, this might be his lone opportunity to cash in. So I don't think you're getting any sort of team discount out of L'Jarius Sneed. On Chris Jones, on the other hand, this is his third contract. He's already had a big contract. Do I think it's going to be a massive team discount? No. But I think there is something in the back of his head that says, I don't want to hold out. I don't want this to trickle into the regular season. I don't want this to mess up their offseason plans and their flexibility to go out and do something. We're either going to get something done or we're not going to get something done. But there's something to be said for Chris Jones in the fact that I can still get a lot of money, just maybe not the most money, and then stick around and be able to try to go and do something, be a part of some of all three of these historic, you know, Super Bowls, mm-hmm. and be a part of all three of these three-peat, and be the core guys that made this happen. And so I think in the back of his head, there has to be at least a little bit of a consideration. If we're talking the difference of maybe $10 million over 4 years, right? Like, or 3 years, like maybe you take the $10 million less to stay in Kansas City, right? If he doesn't, $10 million is still $10 million. I'm never going to blame anybody for saying, hey, I'll take the $10 million. Thank you very much. I'll see you later. But I think that it's at least a consideration and something that he has to figure into his mindset. Other than that, I'm of the belief that you push all your chips in and you try to go for it this offseason. You're going to have Mahomes for another decade, which means that you have at least 1.5 more complete rebuilds in you, right? You know? And so if you got to blow it up after next season, then you have had a three-peat, right? And then you rebuild it. And maybe you try to get another three-peat in Mahomes' lifetime. You're always going to be contenders as long as you have Mahomes. But this is your chance to build that historically good team that's going to do something that no team in the history of the NFL has ever done.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the players are probably thinking now, let's finish something what we've started here, because they've clearly quietened down the doubters, especially this year. I know they did quite a bit last year, but they've especially done it this year in this playoff run, because the teams that they've faced should have buried this Chiefs team. Let's be honest. They should have buried them. From the performances that we saw during the season, the AFC teams that were in the playoffs should have at least put the Chiefs to bed, and they couldn't do it because clearly this Chiefs defense was all about winning the championships. And I think you're right. I think a lot of the players are probably thinking that, yes, let's go for this three-peat, whatever the situation is, whatever the contracts we've got to sign or whatever, not sign, or even some players might even be thinking, look, I'll eke out a bit more of my contract just to restructure it, get who we need to get just to obviously get this three-peat, because I clearly think that is on everybody's mindset right now. I think you're right, though. I think LeJarius Sneed's probably thinking, well, no, I seriously need the bag. I seriously need the bag here. And he quite rightly needs the bag because of the way he's locked down some of the best wide receivers in the NFL this year. I think Mahomes recognizes that. I think he recognized more than ever this year that it is a team game. It is mostly a team game. Yes, okay, the quarterback's always going to get the biggest, you know, biggest share of the cheese. But I do think that Mahomes is thinking, you know what, I want to reward these guys as well. Let's restructure my contract. Let's get the people, the Chris Jones signed. Let's get Sneed signed, but let's get some weapons at the same time. And there's quite a few wide receivers going to be coming up into free agency this year. I'm wondering if the Chiefs are actually going to be, that's going to be where they put all the chips, as you were saying, putting all the chips in on the wide receiving side after they've signed Chris Jones and LeJarius Sneed. It could be that. And I think Mahomes is very much on board with that. That's definitely the right time to have that discussion with Mahomes right now, is we need to go and get you some weapons, but we also need to give you the defense, the championship winning defense that is actually going to get you over that line if the offense is spluttering again. And I think he's going to be all in on that. I think this Chiefs team could go on to actually achieve this 3-peat. I really do believe it's on. Do you?
Oh, I think they're 100%. I think the Chiefs are going to 3-peat. I'm putting my flag in the ground on this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to get caught doubting like I did halfway through the season this year. I'm telling myself, no matter how bad it gets at any point next season, the Kansas City Chiefs are like an NBA team that start trying in the playoffs, and they're just going to get to the playoffs and they're going to turn it on and they're going to win another Super Bowl. The Chiefs are going to three-peat. I do think the Chiefs are going to put all their chips in. Like I said, I think they will retain Sneed and Jones. The problem is once you retain Sneed and Jones, that's an awful lot of money. We're talking $45 million minimum, right? You know, so
that's a lot of dough in it.
Yeah, unless you find a way, like I said, to put most of it into signing bonus. That's a lot of dough, and that's really going to limit your ability to go crazy in free agency and go after one of these top flight wide receivers, which is why I think that you might see the Chiefs in offensive skill positions this year do what they did similarly in years past in the draft with offensive line, and like they did with the secondary, where they just go ham on drafting wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, and they just try to build a young core around Patrick Mahomes that's going to be cheap. And then they try to develop them and bring them along like they did Rashee Rice this year. I think the Chiefs go offensive weapon in rounds one, maybe round two as well. And I think that if you're ever going to trade up to go out and get a wide receiver, like a blue chipper, like go out and get a blue chip wide receiver, this is the draft to do it in. Now, you're not going to trade up and get a Romo Dunze, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison. Like those guys are out of reach. Like they are. Like you're talking about trading up from 32 to 5, right? Like that's just not going to happen. That's not going to happen. But there's plenty of guys in this draft that have wide receiver one talent that you could trade up into in the 20s and possibly nab if one of them's there. So I think that you're going to see the Chiefs don't need 7 draft picks this year. Like walk away with 4 good players on offense out of this draft. And that's good. Like we've gotten spoiled that we think that Brett Veach is going to hit on a 7th rounder every single year. That's not reality. No, the reality is that your 5th, 6th, and 7th round draft picks are lottery tickets that a lot of times don't even make the roster on most NFL squads, right? Yeah. And so the fact that we can't count on those to be contributors year in and year out. So if you can use those as trading chips to move up in a mid round and get a guy in the 2nd or 3rd round that you have your eye on that possibly has slid further down the draft board than you expected, then go out and do it. Just make sure that it's a Rashee Rice and not a Sky Moore. Like that's what you got to do. Like this is the off season where the scouting department has to hit on offensive weapons. Like this is that's the key to this offense is in the draft. Are you going to hit on offensive weapons? Are you going to get Rashee Rice? Or you're going to get Sky Moore, right? You can't afford to go out and trade up and get a John Baldwin in the 1st round of this draft, right? You know, you got to at least get a Dwayne Bowe, you know, or something like that. So, I mean, in my opinion, that's kind of where the success of the offense of the offseason, hinges on is how good do they do at scouting their offensive weapons in this draft.
But here's the thing, Caleb, we got to set the table in terms of what the Chiefs actually need to look for in terms of positional needs. And that's what I did for the site this week. I did write the top 5, what I believe are the Chiefs position needs going into this offseason in order 1 to 5. And I think I people were surprised with my number one. I want to see if you were too, but my number one was defensive tackle. Number 2, wide receiver. Number 3, left tackle. Number 4, defensive end. And number 5, running back. Were you surprised with what position I had top of the order?
I'm not. I can see where a lot of people would be on the defensive tackle. You know, I mean, everyone's like, get the receivers. They like do not have any depth currently on the defensive line. They don't even have nothing. They literally have nothing. Like they have Neil Farrell and Isaiah Bugs, and that's
He is on a reserve future, which that's a nice little stash. I will and say.
About the guys that made plays in the Super Bowl: Chris Jones, Mike Pinnell, Tershawn Wharton, Mike Dana. Those are guys that are all getting ready to be free agents. So, I thought defensive tackle has been a need for the Chiefs for a while now. I think we all thought that last offseason. I think this year's the year to attack it, regardless. If you re-sign Chris Jones, still go draft a defensive lineman. I don't care if you take a defensive lineman in the 1st round either. You can never have enough of those guys, at least in my opinion. But they got to do something to just kind of replenish that position unit.
Yeah, definitely. Is there any other position you think you would have put in the top 5? Because, you know, I think defensive end was higher than I thought it would be. But that Charles Omenihu injury is huge, man. And we'll get into it. But, you know, it's a higher need than you think. Are there any other positions you think you would have put in above, you know, I had running back at 5, you know, might be controversial.
I think linebacker, I mean, there's a chance where they could lose Tranquil, and Willie Gay probably is getting ready to walk in free agency. So you're losing 2 guys that play critical snaps. Tranquil stepping in for Bolton with some massive snaps at one point in the season. I mean, that leaves you with Bolton, Chenault, and like some like Jack Conkren. I mean, though, you're losing two guys who were a staple in the defense this year. Willie's been the staple for the last couple of years. But I mean, I know everyone's saying, you know, oh, it's for sure they're going to get Drew Tranquil, man. Nothing's for sure in the NFL. I mean, I know he obviously sounds like he wants to stay here. He says, but man, we've played this game the last year with Juju. Also, we played this exact same game with Juju Smith-Schuster last year. You know, everyone's, you know, he wanted to be back. Everyone said, but at the end of the day, he took the best deal he got. I wouldn't be so shocked if that didn't happen again with Tranquil. So I could definitely see linebacker turning into a need for this team.
Yeah, and I figured you were going to go there. And I thought about linebacker hard because, you know, I do think it's an important position to have depth at and to have guys at. And because they do have Nick Bolton, Leishon all next year, to have guys behind them is important. And we'll see that, we'll talk about that a little more. Because, yeah, let's get in a little deeper into each position because we already kind of talked about the defensive tackle group. But you're right. Under contract next year, we only have Neil Farrell. On reserve futures, you do have Isaiah Bugs and Matt Dickerson. But, you know, that's not something that you should hang your hat on. This team does really need to attack defensive tackle both, I think, in free agency and the draft. And I'm not saying, like, big money in free agency, but let's see a nose tackle, like a legit nose tackle. There are some dudes out there, some veteran guys out there, that they could bring in that'll eat gaps up, you know, maybe be an upgrade to Derek Nnadi the last few years as that starting nose tackle. But they need to attack it in both free agency and the draft. The problem, though, Caleb, and I don't know what you feel about this, but it just feels like if they're going to attack defensive tackle in the draft, you know, should they do it with their first pick, you know, or should they do it, you know, later in the draft? I guess it depends on the Chris Jones situation, right? But I don't know. Either way, don't you think that they just got to replenish it both avenues?
I would tell you this. From what I've seen the last week from evaluating the defensive tackles, this class is ridiculously loaded. Like, ooh. I know we say okay, this a lot, but, I mean, there are so many talented dudes that do so many different things well. I mean, Johnny Newton from Illinois, he's probably got to be the consensus best defensive tackle in the draft. He's unbelievable. I mean, I could go down the list. We'll save all that for later. If you get a chance to draft a guy in the first round that you think is a difference-making defensive lineman, take him. Because if you put him inside next to Chris Jones and then Charles Omenihu does come back, you're putting offenses in such a bind across the board for what they have to do to be able to protect the quarterback, and you're setting up so many one-on-ones across the board. Like, I would not see it as a bad thing if they found another impact-making defensive lineman in the first round.
Even if they got Chris Jones. Even if they
secure Chris Jones. That's just a plus because, I mean, Chris Jones is getting up there. You need someone to help with the snap right down eventually. Like, if you want Chris Jones to be Chris Jones like he was, like, because he was tired at the end of the Super Bowl, man. I mean, he is going to start getting up there in age. Like, you need someone to be able to go out there on some third. You need someone else to be able to go in there on some third downs in the regular season and get after the quarterback a little bit.
No, dude, I it's a good point about, I mean, if the class is loaded, like you're saying, like I believe you. I love to hear that because I've not been able to dive into it too much because that's the thing is it's not a value high position, right? Where it's going to go super high. If it is a loaded class, the Chiefs are sitting in the money spot to get whoever they really want in that kind of top of the class, just because I'm sure Johnny Newton might go high. It sounds like Byron Murphy, the Texas defensive tackle, might be starting to climb up boards, and I'm sure he's looking good. But that's the thing. It's you know, usually in some classes, it's defensive tackle is kind of a bad position to draft in the first round, just because, you know, are you going to really find an impact guy if he's not one of the top guys in the first round? But if it's such a loaded class, it's going to push that talent down. Might have a chance at some guys in that first round, and that might make might change their decision kind of in free agency too, in terms of maybe going after a receiver in free agency, maybe because that's the next position we'll get into. But yeah, I don't know, Caleb. I mean, that's interesting. I'm excited to get in the defensive line class.
That's a whole generation of kids at defensive linemen. They've grown up watching like Aaron Donald and Fletcher Cox and some of these like
– And Chris Jones.
And Chris Jones, man. These guys have grown up watching these guys play. So it's not like we're talking about defensive linemen from the 1990s where we want a bunch of 370-pound space eaters. Like these guys we're talking about right now, they're like some, you know, there's some rocked up dudes in this class. They are like legit elite athletes across the board. And I mean, I've just been extremely impressed with what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I honestly kind of hope they double up in the class, in the draft, even if it is early, both picks. I think they need to. They haven't drafted defensive tackle early in a long time. Keandre Coburn was a sixth-round pick last year. They didn't even give him to the first week. So, yeah, and so, yeah, our last thing here maybe is, you know, I don't think Tershawn Wharton should be back or Derek Nnadi. I do want to see Chris Jones back. I know it's almost – If we're being realistic, it's hard to say that Chris Jones and Snead are both back. But you know, I just want to see them keep the team together to get that three-peat. So I'll say Chris Jones is back. But what do you say on Nnadi and Wharton?
I think in general his playing days are probably numbered. He's just suffered so many injuries. It's the injuries, man. It's the beating it takes playing as many reps as he did early on in his career as that one tech. I wouldn't mind like Tershawn Wharton or Malik Herring back, to be honest with you. I'd take either one of those guys back. They know the system. They're going to be guys that you can put in, and they both, you know, they did perform pretty well down the stretch of things. I understand why there's reasons you might not want them back. You know, Wharton struggles in the run game at times. You know, he's really like does his best work when it's like a passing down. He can get a one-on-one. But I wouldn't be mad if he's back because it's probably not going to be like a big deal or anything.
But I just think they need to replace those snaps with other just guys that can give them, you know, maybe a higher ceiling or just, you know, development, you know, and they just haven't done that at all the last few years. They've just recycled the same players at defensive tackle around Chris Jones. You know, they tried with Jaron Reed that one year, but defensive tackle, that's why it's my number one need. I mean, I think we just talked about a lot of different stuff because, and that's the other thing is there's just different positions, right? Like you need guys that can stuff, but you also need guys that can penetrate behind Chris Jones. Even if you sign him, if you don't get Chris Jones, man, you might need to find a couple guys that can really get after it from the interior. Just because that's like you named earlier, it's the name of the game. So I think defensive tackle really does deserve number one priority. But we can go through the other ones a little quicker because wide receiver is number two for a reason, right? Even though there are like almost every receiver from the Super Bowl team is under contract. Like this team, how funny would it be, Caleb, if this team just said, you know what, guys, we won a Super Bowl with this receiving core minus Mecole Hardman and Richie James in 2024. They just roll into the season with Rashee Rice, MVS, Justin Watson, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, Justin Ross. It's just like, hey, you know. Why are you guys mad? You know, we just won a Super Bowl with this team. There's just no way they can do that. They have to shake up the receiving position, right? Like there's no way they can do that, right, Caleb?
Yeah. I mean, they put the whole, we can give Mahomes any receivers we want and he'll figure it out. They put that to the test this year and they barely passed it. But I mean, they have to improve on something, man. You can't. And because my other thing is, like, if you can't retain all the defensive pieces, the offense is going to have to return back to top five form, which I think they can do very easily, especially since Rashee Rice has kind of hit his stride a little bit here. But you don't want Mahomes to have to just labor like he did this year. It felt like there was, like, he was laboring. The offense had to labor. You know, you see a lot of these lesser quarterbacks, they have a much easier time to throw into some, you know, just other better receivers. So, would definitely like to see that. I'm still skeptical they'll actually let MVS walk or not, but I still think there's more than enough room on the roster to add one to two to three guys if they want to.
Yeah, because that is the foregone conclusion from everybody now, right? That MVS, you know, you save $12 million in cap space. It's kind of the obvious way to get a little more room to do other stuff this offseason. Plus, and it's true, man. I mean, just think about you just grab MVS, you take him out of the offense, and then you put a really good receiver in the snaps he was playing, the position he was running in terms of being on the outside, you know, running deep routes and trying to, you know, make big plays. There are so many better players than him that they could put in that position if they really want to invest in that receiver spot. And I'd love to see it. And honestly, that's the thing. It may only take, you know, really taking a big swing at a player to take over that MVS role. But you're skeptical. He's going to obviously he's not going to return on the cap number he's at. But yeah, obviously they could work out something where he's back on a lower number. I hope they just part ways, man. I think he's had, you know, I'm not a huge fan of MVS. I'm just to be honest with you. He's had a bad attitude at times. I don't know. So shout out his charity event though, his charity softball game. But let's just, I think you got to just pull the plug and let him go get overpaid somewhere else because he's a Super Bowl, two-time Super Bowl champ.
If he doesn't catch the ball in the AFC title game, and if he doesn't catch that touchdown, we're probably not even considering this. So yeah, he probably is going to be somewhere else, but he'll find somewhere to play in the NFL because he's still got the rings on his fingers.
Right.
You don't just go scoring touchdowns and making plays like he has in the playoffs the last 2 years and find nowhere to go. So he'll find somewhere.
Yeah, no, I know, right? I don't think it's going to be Anthony Hitchens where he just disappears. I thought it was going to be like at some points this season where he just wouldn't find another team again, but he'll find another squad to run, you know, 0.4 yards per route or whatever he was doing this year. But okay, so I think though the receiving the number one thing about the receiving position attacking it this offseason really does need to be whether it is free agency or the draft, get somebody that makes Rice the number two receiver. I don't want them to enter 2024 where it feels like Rice is like the has to be like this number one receiver facing the top coverage. Like I know if you draft someone day one, you can't expect them maybe to like be the top target, but you need to get someone that is like a wide receiver one type in terms of kind of winning in different ways, you know, winning off the ball, creating separation, you know, on routes. That's the thing. You know, I think Rice's strengths are, you know, getting an open space and taking advantage of Yak and taking advantage of the other guys, you know, kind of, you know, taking the coverage with them. So I don't want that to go away. So I don't know. Do you agree with that? Do you want that? How, like, I don't know. Would you be comfortable with Rice as the clear wide receiver one if they really didn't invest in the receiver position that hard?
Does make me nervous if he does have to take on that full workload because his A dot per reception is still very low. They still really used him like a lot. Like a lot of his usage was still on screen passes or when Andy would cook up like one of those crossing patterns or the mesh concepts. These are still like routes. He's not like exploding downfield, but he's got the great yak. So you're like, yeah, if we get Kelce and another receiver, this is still going to be perfect for Rice because if they start, you know, looking at those guys playing downfield, we're still going to have his physical running style and all of that, you know, to where he's able to still, you know, get those yards, create those plays, and still be like a very viable option to the offense. I just think, though, that with every, you know, all the struggles they had, I don't want to see them go to him like too much or put too much pressure on him because he's still developing. I mean, there's a chance maybe in 4 years they bring him back on a contract and he is the number one receiver. I think that's totally fair. I still don't know if he's going to be ready for it right now. He was ready for it in the playoffs, but still, like you said, they still just ran a lot of screens through him in the meantime. So I would definitely not be opposed to getting someone.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts.